Tigers rally, survive and advance to take on Mississippi State. Do the Pelicans really have enough in place now to bring AD back into the fold? We'll get a national perspective on that. The Saints sign another defensive end as OTAs begin. We'll get the latest on the Hoodats and all things college football. Oh, we got a series in the East tied at 2 games apiece as the Golden State Warriors wait on the golf course. Today, Wednesday, May 22nd, 2019.
To Bledsoe, far side, drives on Van Vliet. Kick out to Connaughton. The floater off the lane, no good. Rebound Powell. On the drive, Lowry down the left side, far wing.
Down 5-1. First pitch. Launched in the air to right field. It's going to drop down in front of Allen. They'll go ahead and send in Broussard. He will score. And an RBI single for Cade Beloso. Check that. They'll bring in 2 runs. 2 RBI single to make it 5-3.
Here's the 0-1. And this one's hit pretty well, right field. That sends Tilson back. He's on the track. That ball is gone. Gurriel, 1-0.
Oh, welcome, welcome, welcome. What a busy day. Happy hump day to you and yours. He is CD in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios. Yours truly here, Studio 1A, Jordy Helper. Great to be with you. We're in the top of the ninth in the Sun Belt Conference Baseball Championships. Georgia Southern leads the Raging Cajuns 3-2. Georgia Southern scored 2 in the third. The Raging Cajuns came back and tied it with 2 in the top of the fifth. Georgia Southern scored 1 in the bottom of the eighth. So the Raging Cajuns are down to their last 3 outs of the season. We'll keep you updated throughout. But right now, Georgia Southern, 3. The Raging Cajuns, 2. LSU survived and advanced last night. They got off to a great start. First batter up, it was a tremendous, tremendous hit by one Josh Smith with a leadoff home run, and he talked about it after.
That was pretty special for me. I didn't get to play here last year, so coming out first at bat, hit a home run was something you dream about as a kid here, so it was a pretty cool experience.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, so we definitely didn't want to come here and go one and done and accomplish that goal, so now we got another game tomorrow, and hopefully we'll keep winning those, maybe eventually win enough to host a regional, try to get back to Baton Rouge, play another series at the box. So.
Cole Henry, in his first start since returning from an injury, he went 1 2/3 of an inning. He gave up 5 runs, 4 of which were earned on 5 hits. But the story of the night was Devin Fontenot. 4 1/3 innings of shutout work. He saved the day by allowing only 1 hit and 2 walks while striking out 4. Devin Fontenot after the win.
You know, these last 2 outings that I had, and both of them were starts. You know, kind of got my momentum back, and I knew that this was a big game for the team, and I was going to do anything I could to, step up and give us however many innings I needed today.
Just talk about how big it was to win this game. I mean, Coach said, you know, you lose this game, you go home, you kind of put a lot of things in other people's hands in terms of trying to host.
I knew this was a huge win. You win today, you get to stay here for a couple more days. You know, we got Mississippi State tomorrow, so we're really excited for that, and we know that if we, you know, make a run here, we should be able to host, and, you know, the people in BR would love to see us back in Baton Rouge for a regional.
Yes, they would. So, again, tonight it's LSU with Eric Walker on the bump taking on Mississippi State, tentatively set for 8 o'clock. Just like yesterday, you can Stay tuned. Keep it on 103.7 The Game the entire time, and you'll be able to listen to the ball game, the pregame show, 30 minutes prior to it. Today, Georgia, man, what a performance. Gets a walk-off two-run home run in the bottom of the ninth to beat Texas A&M 2-0. The second game is underway right now. Top of the fifth, Ole Miss and Arkansas tied at 2-2. The first game in the nightcap will be Auburn versus Vanderbilt, and then, of course, will be LSU versus Mississippi State. In about 7 minutes or so, we'll head out to Hoover, Alabama, to the Met. David DeLucci, part of the SEC Network, Baton Rouge boy, former Ole Miss Rebel, and a longtime Major League Baseball player, Yankees and others. He will join us to talk about that. We'll also talk with Sam Amico, big-time NBA writer. He'll get his thoughts on the Pelicans. Do they have enough to keep Anthony Davis? And if not, what kind of king's ransom? He worked with David Griffin. He covered the Cavaliers with LeBron and David Griffin. So he knows David Griffin. They send text messages back and forth to one another. We'll get the inner workings of that. Drew Brees was in town promoting flag football. Nick Fontenot will join us. He was there, as was CD. CD's everywhere. And he'll share his thoughts on Drew Brees and how this flag football is just growing like crazy. 200 kids signed up in the Acadiana Lafayette area. So it's going to be fun watching your sons and daughters playing a little flag football. In hour number two, after Hot Topics, Bob Rose will join us, a writer for Canal Street Chronicles. Saints sign a defensive end from Carolina. Should they be in the hunt for Gerald McCoy, the just-released defensive lineman from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? And OTAs are beginning. What are the headline and the top stories going into those OTAs? We'll talk with Bob Rose. And, of course, it wouldn't be hump day without Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. So we'll share some thoughts on that. Meanwhile, in the NBA last night, boy, I tell you what, it's a series now as the Raptors took care of business and took care of the Milwaukee Bucks, sending them home to two straight losses. Kyle Lowry, the much maligned in the opening series, he needed to step up his game, and offensively, he and his teammates did just that.
Third game of the playoffs where everyone's kind of stepped up and played and scored and did some things well. But this is one of the nights that, we knew Kawhi was a little bit limited. We had to come out and be aggressive for him. And the great thing about having him on your team is he still gets all the attention. We fed off of that, drive, kick, swing. He gets in the lane, kick out. And that's the benefit of having a superstar like him on the team.
Giannis Antetokounmpo talked about, okay, look, we're not going to lose confidence. We know we're going home. We feel good about it.
We realize, where we are right now, we realize the opportunity that we have. But at the end of the day, with good habits, all season long. So we're not going to lose, our confidence. We're going to keep believing in our habits, keep trusting one another. And it's going to take care of itself. At the end of the day, if we do the right thing, we still believe in our habits and we still trust one another, and it doesn't take care of itself. We did our job. That's what it's all about.
Well, we mentioned Drew Brees in town promoting flag football with Football in America, but the big topic on everybody's mind, Gerald McCoy, who has a relationship with Drew Brees, and Drew Brees talked about the possibility of having the big Tampa Bay Buck on the roster.
You're basically asking me if I would love having a Pro Bowl defensive tackle that I've spent the last 8 years trying to run around and avoid and not have hit me to join our team. Yeah, of course.
All right. Well, Drew, go talk to Mickey and Sean and Jeff, and let's go get him on a one-year deal, and let's make this run for the Super Bowl. That's just some of the topics that we will discuss and more today. But first, after this timeout, you're listening to the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We're heading out to Hoover, Alabama. David DeLucci of the SEC Network will join us to talk about LSU, Mississippi State. It's a big one. I think it locks up an NCAA regional bid if LSU can somehow figure out a way to get a win over the Bulldogs where they kind of own the Hoover Met. We'll be back. Stay with us. 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
sticks and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. One game in the books. The single elimination part of the SEC baseball tournament is over. Now we're at double elimination time. Georgia beats Texas A&M, a pitching duel throughout in game one today, 2-0. We're in the bottom of the fifth of game number two. Ole Miss and Arkansas tied at 2 apiece. We've got Auburn-Vanderbilt in game one of the nightcap, followed by LSU versus Mississippi State. It is a pleasure to welcome the former Ole Miss Rebel, but he's really a Baton Rougean, major leaguer, now doing a terrific job on the SEC Network as an analyst, our good friend David DeLucci. Superstar, how are you?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. If you hear a little noise in the background, I'm at a place in Hoover that's hosting the greatest college baseball tournament right now. I have the opportunity to work the SEC tournament. Man, it's been awesome so far.
It has been some great games and some fun games. I got to get your thoughts on LSU, Mississippi State. I saw some numbers. Paul Maneri is 36-8 in the SEC tournament. Five of the eight losses were by one run. His teams have now faced four-run deficits six times in Hoover, and they've won four of those. That's kind of an unbelievable set of statistics, David.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to throw some more numbers at you, too. LSU, in the past 4 years, has won 10 out of 12 games against Mississippi State. That's, you know, what they call borderline ownership out here. LSU is a team that is really not afraid to fall behind in the game. Actually, I think sometimes they feel more comfortable because they take advantage of the opposing team's mistakes, whether it's pitches left up in the strike zone or miscues in the field. It's a team that historically, as you can hear the music in the background over here, it's a team that historically is confident that they're going to pull out every single game. And you look, I mean, sitting here in Hoover, this is an extended home game because the fans travel so well, and who wouldn't be comfortable that you're going to win every game when you have that kind of fan support?
Yeah, they call it LSU East in this part of the world, and the fans do flock and do show up. But look, South Carolina is South Carolina. They weren't a very good club. They had the worst batting average in the league, one of the worst ERAs in the league. Mississippi State's a whole nother can of worms. What impresses you about the Bulldogs?
They can do it. They can beat you anyway. I mean, they've got a tremendous starting pitching staff this year. Ethan Small leads the nation, or is one of the leaders in strikeouts. A freshman in JT Ginn that turned down the first round to be their number two weekend starter. And it's just a supporting cast behind him on offense. It's led by Jake Mangum, who really can will a team to go as far as he wants them to. We saw him do that last year, taking Mississippi State to Omaha. And I tell you, I mean, they're averaging a little over 8.5 runs a game. There's just not a whole lot of holes in that team, not in the pitching staff, not in the bullpen, and not as far as offense goes. I mean, they are from top to bottom as good as they get, and they're playing with a lot of confidence. They believe they can beat everybody.
What is it about LSU? And I don't want to jinx LSU, but they've owned them. They've owned them in Baton Rouge. They've owned them in Starkville. They've owned them in the SEC tournament. Is that in the head of the Bulldogs in any way, shape, or form?
I would say on a normal team, it may be, but the way that Mississippi State, the way that they conduct themselves, the way they handle their business, they're not afraid of anybody. I think that rivalry between State and LSU started way back in the day when Ron Polk was coaching the Bulldogs and Skip Bertman, and it became one of the best rivalries in the nation, and I think that has just kind of led to an awful lot of close games. It led to Andy Cannizzaro leaving LSU, going to Mississippi State. That kind of boosted the rivalry and made it a little more intense for LSU to win those games. So throughout the course of the years, they've been the top two programs in the country. They're going to face each other a lot, and right now LSU's got the upper hand.
One of the biggest mistakes LSU ever made is letting you get out of Baton Rouge. How in the heck did that happen?
Man, I tell you, they were. I wasn't recruited at the time, and that was a time when LSU was expecting the local players to walk on, and they did a great job of recruiting players from California, Florida, all over the country. And it wasn't until some alumni started complaining that it looked like I was going to go to Mississippi State or Ole Miss that LSU sent me a letter and said I could walk on, and if I played well enough, I would earn books. And it was hard for me with the scholarship offers that I had to turn down what was on the table to come to LSU. And I grew up loving LSU. I attended all the football and baseball games. It was a very tough decision for me and my family. But in the long run, you had to go where you were wanted the most. And there was a commitment by Ole Miss that I would play. And look, hey, it worked out great for both of us. They won national championships. I made it to the major leagues. And
right.
I love the purple and gold to this day, but I had to do what was best for me in my career, and that was go to the rival.
I still think it's one of their biggest mistakes, and they readily admit it to me. That's one of those that they somehow let slip through the cracks, and that's I'm glad that kind of changed after that. We're talking with David DeLucci. Everybody's high on Vanderbilt. Are you as equally as high on them as many others are?
Pick to win it all, and it came down between them and Mississippi State. I went with Vanderbilt because in a tournament format, it's not necessarily the three weekend starters that gets you through the tournament. It's the whole staff. And I think Vanderbilt has a midweek starter that we'll see today in their first game named Mason Hickman, who is outstanding, could be a weekend starter for anybody. And along with him and their three weekend starters, they have a combined ERA of 2.6. They're rolling.
Wow.
Get that along with their offense with J.J. Blade and Austin Martin, two Golden Spikes Awards semifinalists. One of them's hitting 432, and the other one's got 25 home runs. They're crushing the ball, man. They're leading the SEC in on-base percentage and slugging percentage. So not only are they getting them on base, they're bringing them in. And I just think from top to bottom, they're one of the best teams in the country.
Oh, what did you think of Devin Fontenot last night for LSU? I mean, that was you never know when somebody's going to step up and do something that maybe you don't expect. But without him, LSU's not playing today.
Yeah, no, it's kind of been that way for LSU all season, right? It's been a player that has risen to the occasion and really produced when he's been called upon. And that's one of the things I like about LSU is it's not necessarily one guy that's carried the team the whole year. It's been a whole group. And with the injuries that they've had, to be where they are right now is nothing short of incredible. I mean, not only injuries to the pitching staff, but to the position players as well. And to keep it together, to me, says a lot about the senior and veteran leadership that LSU has. Remember, Hess and Watson and those guys turned down the draft, and Plannis turned down the draft to go back and play their final year. And I tell you, it's been a magical year. This is when LSU really kicks it in gear at the SEC tournament. We know now that they're going to be in a regional, and they may even host. So I think there's bigger and better things coming for this team.
Do you think I think a win today locks up a regional host bid? Are you in agreement with that?
Yeah, I think it does because it was down to them and A&M. LSU has the higher conference record, so the nod was going to LSU. Both teams won, and now you're in a double elimination format. So LSU is going to play two games no matter what. If they win today, that kind of gives them another 2 days over here. It looks even better on their resume. But look, let's face it. The committee cannot turn down the fact that LSU packed the house on a regional. All right, that's one of the things that they want when they make these calls. And I got LSU. It's almost guaranteed. I think they're going to host.
He is David DeLucci. You know, in basketball, we can talk about keys to a win. You know, you got to shoot the ball well. You got to rebound. Don't turn it over. Football, you got to protect the quarterback. You got to control the line of scrimmage. Keys to baseball. Is there a key for LSU to win tonight's game?
Keys for LSU or to throw strikes? Throw strikes, and the common thread for this tournament is to play error-free baseball behind you. If you lose control of the strike zone and you let players get free passes, they're going to hurt you, especially where we're at now. You know, we're now down to the four big dogs, Georgia, Arkansas, Vandy, and State. they will punish you if you have mistakes and if you give up extra base hits or walks. They got to play clean defense and pitching. I like the move of Zach Hess to the bullpen. You can put him in almost any game, any situation. LSU just got to limit the walks. They got to throw strikes, and I think they'll be fine.
You can watch David DeLucci on the set. I tell you what, between you, McDonald, and Walker, I just put you three on my team, and I don't know much about baseball, but I'll win games. I will win games, David.
I love it. Hey, look, I've been around these guys every day. I think we're in decent shape. I would like to see what we can do if we played. I know Ben could probably go out there and throw seven innings. Todd still got a good swing. I think we may have a few innings left in us.
I'm signing you up, man. I am signing you up. David, thanks so much. I know you're busy, but you're doing a great job, and it's always fun talking with you, buddy. Take care.
Thanks for having me, Jordy. Y'all take care. Go Tigers.
There you go. That's an old Miss Rubble saying that. How about that? So the keys, throw strikes, play good fundamental defense. Don't give any cheap ones away. Throw strikes, and we'll see. Eric Walker will be on the hill for LSU, and again, that game set to start at 8 p.m., but we know it's going to be later than that. Again, Georgia beats Texas A&M 2-0 in game one today. Ole Miss, bottom of the sixth, has a 3-2 lead over Arkansas, so that's an upset in the making there. Then you've got Auburn versus Vanderbilt, followed by LSU and Mississippi State. So we're just beginning here. We're going to shift gears after this timeout. Sam Amico, I met Sam when we were on the NBA beat. I was doing the Hornets television. Sam was covering the Cleveland Cavaliers. He knows David Griffin up close and personal. We'll get to figure out what's going on with AD and the Pelicans and Zion and the Pelicans. Next on the Jordy Helpert Show. I can hear it now. Oh no, oh no.
Yeah, my tongue will let it slip. At this point, Major League Baseball.
Let's talk some hoops. It's a 2-2 series in the Eastern Conference Finals as Toronto got the Bucks again. Game 5 heads back to Milwaukee. Meanwhile, the Golden State Warriors sit and wait. Steph Curry's probably on a golf course. And we'll find out more about Kevin Durant if he's good to go for the finals. But anyway, I respect our next guest greatly. He is the you can find him at Amigo Hoops. He's a former Fox NBA writer, broadcaster. He's also AmicoHoops.net. And Sam, kind enough to join us. Sam, but it's been a long time since we crossed paths back in the day when you were covering LeBron and the Cavs and I was with the Hornets. But it's great to talk to you, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I'm pretty sure that was during the first LeBron era in Cleveland. Yeah, so it's been a while.
Yes. Yes, it has been a while, but thank you so much for your time. I'm very curious, as a as someone who knows and understands the league, your thoughts on the moves that the New Orleans Pelicans have made, one, in hiring a guy that you know in David Griffin, then bringing in Trajan Langdon as his GM, and hiring Aaron Nelson away from the Suns to man the training, the rehabilitation aspect of the Pelicans organization?
Well, to start with David Griffin, brilliant move, just an excellent move. Covered him here in Cleveland for a while. And he is a player, he is a guy, what we like to call culture builder. That's what he does. He's a player's GM. You know, and I remember when Chris Grant, the old Cavs GM, got fired toward the end of the season. The Cavs were a miserable mess. They had just, this was before LeBron came back in 2014. It was the 2013-14 season. The Cavs had lost a home game to the Lakers, where the Lakers only had, at the end, four available players because everybody fouled out. And the Cavs still lost. And They fired Chris Grant the next day, and David Griffin, who was the assistant GM, got the promotion and really came in and immediately turned things around in terms of, you know, I remember his first press conference. He said, we're playing basketball. I want us to have fun. And they started to enjoy the game almost immediately and play better, much better.
Wow.
But everything else being the same when he came in. And it was because he knows how to build a culture and build a locker room. And what a steal, in my opinion. And he did the same thing with LeBron when LeBron was there in 2014. You know, Griff's job changed a lot when LeBron came back because of all the drama that LeBron brings, admittedly brings, and not always his fault. Some of it's the circus that follows him. But, Griff managed that and kept the peace. And kept the drama at bay, and the Cavs were able to win a championship. So I just think he's the perfect type of guy to come in and kind of clean up a situation that needs some work there in New Orleans.
What happened? Why? What eventually happened to Griff in Cleveland?
Well, that was his contract with and. I think Cavs owner Dan Gilbert doesn't really necessarily respect the role of the general manager because Dan Gilbert does a lot of that or tries to, a lot of stuff himself in terms of coaching hires and stuff like that. I remember, before David Blatt was hired in 2014 and LeBron came back that offseason, they had fired Mike Brown. And I wrote a story that they were talking to at that time, Kentucky coach the Cavs were John Calipari. And Griff texts me and says, we're not talking to John Calipari. And I said, you might not be, but your owner is. And so that, in a nutshell, is pretty much how Dan Gilbert views the general manager position. And then when Griff's contract came up, it was just a matter of, well, I'm not going to pay you all this money to do a job that I do part-time anyway. So, and that's, that's no disrespect to the job Griff did there or that Kobe Altman's doing there now. It's just the ownership kind of feels like, hey, we can handle this.
Sam Amico, you can follow him on Twitter at Amico Hoops. If you are a basketball fan, it's must follow material. I'm going to make you the GM now. I'm going to make you David Griffin of the Pelicans. You got Anthony Davis there. And Griff is saying all the right things. He's saying, I think we have enough now with the number one pick in the draft, Zion Williamson. We got Drew Holiday. We're spending $4 million to improve our training facility. We got the best trainer in the league coming. We got a whole new culture. This is going to be great. He's saying all the right things, and he believes he has enough to maybe keep Anthony Davis. I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe just trying to get a bidding war going. What are your thoughts on Anthony Davis, the possibility of him coming back, or is that just a big smokescreen and is Griff trying to just get a bidding war between the Lakers, the Celtics, the Nets, the Clippers, whoever it's out there?
No, I think that he thinks there's a chance. I think David Griffin thinks there's a chance because, again, he knows that Anthony Davis needs to be sold on the culture and the franchise and, what and the plan moving forward. And I think that Griff, having done this before, feels confident that he can do it again. He's not going to try to open a bidding war because there's already going to be a bidding war if Anthony Davis, sticks to the trade demand. Okay. He doesn't need to do that. There's going to be a lot of teams involved, a lot of teams throwing stuff their way. So I think that, he's going to give him an opportunity. And as David Griffin has had the relationship with Rich Paul because Rich also being LeBron James' agent, which is how this whole thing started. Also J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson. So he dealt with them in Cleveland quite a bit, and they do have a strong relationship, very strong mutual respect. They get along very well. So I think it's possible, but Griff knows something that we all know and no one from the national media is really saying. Anthony Davis was basically brainwashed with Rich Paul and LeBron James, the only place he wants to really go is the Lakers. And that's because LeBron and Rich Paul want him. There's no, I know we say Boston, Celtics, New York Knicks, Clippers, give me a break. He wants to go to the Lakers. And that's because LeBron has told Rich Paul, go get Anthony Davis and bring him here. So, you know, all this other stuff. But the thing is, so, you know, Griff's going to call his bluff, I'm sure, you know, and say, okay, you want to go, you want to get traded? Okay, you're not going to Lakers. You know, and I don't think I don't think his stance, Anthony Davis' stance, is quite as strong as he's making it out to be. Because the Pelicans, you know, they can send him wherever they want. Send him to the Atlanta Hawks if you want.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Sam Amico, kind enough to join us with a player. Zion Williamson, you've been around this league a lot. You've seen LeBron James from his infancy onward and upward. When you look at Zion Williamson, what is your perspective on him and the transition from college to the NBA?
Well, he's already, you know, like when LeBron James came in the league, Zion is already a guy who's built for the NBA and built a lot better than a lot of NBA players. He's got the strength already. He obviously can soar. He's very skilled in terms of, you know, people were surprised this year through how well he was able to put the ball on the floor. He's very unselfish, and he really, really is just a great kid. I've had the opportunity to talk to him in a group setting. Just a great kid. I mean, really sharp, got his act together, just a team-first guy. He's gotten over himself. And, you know, you don't say that a lot of times about a kid who's really kind of got the NBA by, you know, basketball world by a string. I mean, he is in a great spot as the number one overall pick. He's dominant as a player. And I know Pelicans fans will love him as a person. He is going to be the type of culture builder that David Griffin loves, and he really. You know, Morant's that way too. Ja Morant, who's probably going to go second to the Grizzlies, but you know, so there, as is apparent, there are three really good people at the top of this draft who also happen to be really good at basketball too. But Williamson, yeah, he's going to be a difference maker. I think everybody knows that almost immediately.
One last question, Sam Amico, at Amico Hoops. If Anthony Davis says to Griff, okay, I'm out of here. Because Griff has said it's either you're all in or you're all out. And if Anthony Davis says I'm all out, what is reasonable with all the dollars and cents that are involved in this? What is a reasonable bounty that the Pels should expect in return for Anthony Davis?
Well, at this point, you know, if you're dealing with the Celtics, obviously we've heard the talk. You want Tatum, you want their draft picks, which the Celtics don't want those picks anyway. So then you have to ask them to throw in something else. You know, give us Rozier, give us somebody else as well that's ready to come in here and play. You know, the thing is with Boston is there's so many guys who are so ticked off at Kyrie, they would welcome a trade. So, you know, that's a team I think you would deal with first. Now, obviously, the Knicks. Yeah. Hey, you know, hey, we got the number three pick. Again, the Lakers, okay, maybe. But you know what? I only want one of the top three picks in this draft. I don't care about number four. I don't, you know, nothing against, like, Jared Culper or DeAndre Hunter or whoever might go for, but you can get those guys probably anywhere. You don't need to draft them. So I just think you're talking Boston and New York are your two spots that really have a lot going for them. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Clippers are able to sneak in there. But right now, I just think that the Lakers, are, you know, I know they really want him and LeBron really wants him, but I just, and that's where Davis wants to go. But I just don't foresee them having the assets that beat other teams' assets and offers. So, look, you start out huge. You start out huge, you know, and then you work your way down. And I think that's what Griffin do. The Pelicans, look, they're in a great spot here in the sense that winning that number one pick really gives them a lot of breathing room with AD. If he decides he's sticking to his trade request, you don't need to worry about it. Okay, well, then we're going to be a young, exciting, upcoming team next year built around a guy who's going to be at least a New Orleans Pelican, you assume, for the next 7 years at least. So they're in a very good spot now winning that number one pick. And they really have the upper hand in all these dealings with Davis.
That's awesome. Sam, thank you so much for your time, buddy. Have a great Memorial Day holiday weekend, and we'll see who the Warriors will face in the finals, man. Great talking to you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right, you too. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Hultberg Show.
Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
I come at this from three different angles, right? I played flag football, so I know what the experience was like for me. I know how it helped prepare me to go on and play football, which I still have the opportunity to play, very blessed to play. So I know how influential it was for me in my life. Number two, I'm a parent of kids that love football or die hard and want to play. And you know what? If there wasn't a good flag football option, they wouldn't really have the chance to play in an organized, structured fashion. And so this gives them an opportunity. And I've watched them grow in leaps and bounds, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, just from being able to play this game. And then I come at it from a coaching perspective. You know, it's like I coach my kids. But every kid I coach, I treat like they're my own child, right? So I love them the same. I discipline them the same, just like I would mine. And because at the end of the day, I think that's part of your responsibility as a coach, right, to develop these kids, to help them build self-esteem, build confidence, but to teach them a skill set. And then all the things that come with sports, right? You're going to win some, and then it's, hey, how do we handle success, right? And then you're going to lose some, and it's, all right, how do we handle failure? How do we handle adversity? So it's great to have the opportunity to impart that on these kids.
Drew Brees last night at the Bayou Church as he brought football in America to Acadiana. Nick Fontenot, a freelance journalist, you can read his articles in the Advertiser, was there. He joins us now. Hey, Nick, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's up, Jordy? How are you?
I'm terrific, man. How impressed were you with number nine, Drew Brees?
Well, I've interacted with Drew a couple of times, and he's always just the classiest individual you're going to talk to. I mean, he's always, you know, willing to talk to the kids, willing to talk to the media, just willing to accommodate anybody. And it was no different last night.
It has certainly taken Acadiana by storm. I read your article. Over 200 kids already involved in this, boys and girls alike?
Yeah, so they started in 2017, and I talked to Bentley Turner, who's the commissioner of the league, and they said they didn't quite have the numbers to get rolling in 17, but then they got rolling last year in 18. They had about 100 kids, and then this year they got about 200 kids. And according to Breeze, they're planning on doubling in size by next year. So
that's awesome. It's all inclusive, boys and girls, from kindergarten through the eighth grade. And you know, Drew Brees didn't start playing tackle football till he was a freshman in high school. So it seems like he's got a pretty good formula here.
Yeah, he kind of mentioned that about how he didn't start till he was a freshman in high school, and how the start he got in flag football really gave him the base of knowledge to become who he was. And a lot of these kids in the FNA league, they might not have the biggest size, they might not be the fastest kids, and when it comes time to go out for a tackle football team, they might be a little bit intimidated, whereas this league kind of gives them that opportunity to learn the game, learn how to play football, learn the, you know, the aspects of being part of a football team and taking those skills and moving on later on in life.
That's awesome. Nick Fontenot, kind enough to join us. I did not know this. I'm glad I read your article, but also Breeze is making a commitment to Lafayette. He's purchased the old church building on the corner of Pinhook and Vero. He's got some entertainment complex. What's that all about?
Yeah, so I think if I'm not mistaken, I think he already has one opened in Metairie, and he's also going to be opening one in Monroe. And he, like you said, he purchased the building right there on the corner of Pinhook and Vero, and they're going to be doing what's called Surge Entertainment. And according to him, it's just going to be like a one-of-a-kind entertainment facility for all ages. He was saying, you know, you can bring your little kids. They'll have stuff to do. The bigger kids, the teenagers, you can even go for, like, guys' night out to watch the game or something like that. It's just going to be all-inclusive for the whole family, and everybody's going to have something to do there. So I think a lot of people were buzzing about that. I was reading online. Everybody on Facebook was buzzing about it. You know, they didn't really know what it was. Drew didn't really go into too much detail about what it's going to be, but it seems to be pretty exciting, and a lot of people around here are looking forward to it.
Hook me up with Drew so we can get him to advertise with us, okay? I mean, come on, Nick. Help us out.
Yeah. If I had that kind of clout.
No, you talk to him on a daily basis. It's all good. It's all good. And that says something to me. But that he would commit to this community. And do you know where these flag games are going to be played? Did he say anything like that?
Well, he didn't say where they're going to be played. But I know after he left the church, he did go over to Youngsville. And he toured the Youngsville Sports Complex. And I don't know if you've ever been there, but that sports complex is first class.
Yes, I have. It's unbelievable.
Everything's first
class. Yes.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. They have football fields. They have soccer fields. They have baseball fields. And so he went over there and toured that facility. So I'm kind of putting the pieces together and thinking that might be where they start to play their games.
He is Nick Fontenot, and on your Twitter handle, it says you are an award-losing freelance reporter for whomever wants to pay me. Please excuse my grammar. I'm from Louisiana. Dude, come on. You're good.
Yeah, I actually have won a few awards. That's kind of the irony about it. We were in college. We would go back and forth, and who would win and who would lose, and so I would just kind of play with that. But that's been there forever. Maybe I should change that.
Yeah, you need to change that. Oh, by the way, just an update. We're running out of time here, but I got to let the audience know. Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns have tied things up. They're in extra innings now against Georgia Southern. 4-4, bottom of the 11th. The 11th has come to an end, so the Raging Cajuns will be batting in the top of the 12th, trying to keep their season alive. Nick, go write some more good stories, man. You'll get paid, and we'll have you on again, man, when we have more time. How about that?
Thanks for having me, Jordy. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. You take care. Nick Fontenot, freelance writer. You can read about him in the advertiser. And Drew Brees bringing a flag football to Acadiana and going to be bringing some fun for everyone. How about that? Pinhook and Vero, the old church building. 41,000 square feet. That tells me bowling alleys, video, games that you play. Arcade games, food, televisions. Oh, yeah. Okay, Surge Entertainment. We'll update the Raging Cajuns when we come back at the top of the hour. This is the Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Packers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New
streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 103.7 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, and away we go. We've got a dandy in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament because the Raging Cajuns tied things up in the top of the ninth against Georgia Southern. Tied it at 3-3. They go to extra innings. Both teams score scoreless in the 10th. The Raging Cajuns score one in the top of the 11th to take a 4-3 lead. Georgia Southern comes back and ties it up at 4-4. And now we're in the top of the 12th with a runner at first and two out as the Raging Cajuns trying to scratch across a run somehow, some way to keep their season alive. So we'll update that throughout. 4-4 is the score. So with that in mind, LSU taking on Mississippi State tonight. Double elimination time now in the SEC tournament. So without further ado, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, baseball here, there, and everywhere, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jordy. I'm just doing fantastic. It's a pretty beautiful day outside today on a Wednesday. And, man, you're talking about the Cajuns.
Yes, indeed.
Georgia Southern just duking it out, about to head towards the bottom of the 12th between those two over in Conway, South Carolina. Definitely one heck of a way to kind of get things going in the second day of the Sun Belt Tournament. Now they're in double elimination mode.
Yes, indeed. So good. Both teams fighting. I mean, both teams coming from behind, rallying when they had to. So we'll see how it all turns up. Good luck to the Cajuns and Tony Robichaux.
It's going to be fun to see what happens in that ball game as we get closer and closer to it. But, Jordy, some big news kind of has just come out over the last few minutes about the future of the NFL, and that is some NFL draft sites. So I want to kind of get your temperature on this one real quick, Jordy. 2020 is going to be in Vegas, 2021 in Cleveland, 2022.
Can't lose it.
Yeah. 2022 hasn't been announced just yet, but 2023 has, and it's in Kansas City, Missouri. Or Kansas City, that's what I should say.
Hmm.
I say it's a pretty good lineup.
Not bad. I mean, Vegas, you can't lose there.
Yeah.
You think they'll ever hold it in New Orleans? Come on.
What
a great city to have a draft.
Oh, it'd be the best city to have a draft possible, but I think the biggest bugaboo is you're also going to probably have to deal with a lot of blowback from Jazz Fest. I think that's the biggest thing because it's always during
Jazz
the first
Fest,
weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, it's far enough away from where you probably wouldn't have to deal with it nearly as much, but you know that Jazz Fest would give you hell for trying to get this thing set up and compete almost directly against it on the first weekend.
Right. You're right.
Like I said, hopefully we want to have cooler heads prevail, though.
Prevail, yeah. I don't care about the draft in New Orleans. I really don't. It's a made-for-TV event.
Yeah.
That's great. It was incredible what they did this year. All sights and sounds will be on Vegas, but gee whiz. I don't know how – Vegas is going to be crazy. They had an NBA All-Star game in Vegas once. They never went back again. It was too crazy, too wild. So, we'll see.
Well, I can about imagine things will get wild in Vegas no matter what's going on, especially now that there will be an NFL team in the Las Vegas Raiders, which sounds weird to say, but that's the thing that's going to wind up happening not too far down the line, Jordy. But we're talking about New Orleans, you know, and you were talking with Nick Fondo earlier about Drew Brees. I have to tell you the story and probably tell everybody else the story. It was pretty cool to see him kind of talk to everybody. And, like, he had a bunch of the kids ask questions. First question, I want you to take a wild guess what that first question was that was asked to Drew Brees.
How much longer are you going to play?
Well, kind of. The kid asked, when are you going to retire?
Okay.
Just basically going, when are you going to retire?
Said,
someday.
Yeah. Come on, guys. Let's enjoy this thing. Don't push him out the door yet.
Oh, yeah. It was great, though, just kind of seeing him interact with everybody. Definitely,
he's
you know,
such a good guy.
You hear a lot about that off the field, but you never really get to see it that often. But I have to agree with it. What the consensus is, probably one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
Look, he knows his hoops too. I sat next to him for an entire Hornets game. I can't remember how many years ago it was, but as nice as could be. And man, we talked to he knew stuff. Man, he's just a good, laid back superstar. You don't find that very often.
And speaking of that, you're talking about Drew Brees knowing a lot about basketball. I have to say, he definitely knew a lot about it. He actually talked about Zion Williamson and hypothetically what Zion Williamson would play if he were part of the Saints.
Red zone specialist.
You don't there like you we don't want to bang those guys around too much because they got long careers in basketball. But I'm just thinking, just a couple fades, you know, back corner of the end zone. I'm sure those guys would like just jumping up and snatching one out of there. I don't think there's many guys that could jump with those guys out there.
A 42-inch vertical jump, they say, that Zion has. Of course, that's a discrepancy from his head coach, who says he would be an edge rusher. So play him both ways, and then get a golf cart and take him across the street to the Smoothie King Center, lace him up, and let's go dunk and play ball.
Exactly. You just need that one play, Jordy, from Zion Williamson to kind of set things off, and it'd be awesome just to see that, even if it was like in a practice situation, just have Zion Williamson catch one pass from Drew Brees in, like, practice during training camp. That'd be great.
Yeah, let's do it. Why not? Absolutely.
And you know, Jordy, we've talked a lot about the Saints. Might as well get to some LSU baseball. Just a phenomenal game last night by LSU, especially offensively. Cade Beloso really has shown kind of why he's been one of the quiet monsters on this team, the sleeping giant, if you will. Because it feels like every time we see Cade Beloso out there, he's going to wind up hitting pretty consistently and have really clutch hits, and he wound up living up to that hype again last night.
Yeah. Freshman from Rummel High School. He wasn't, he had that clutch 2 RBI single to cut the deficit to 5-3, and then he just kept on swinging and hitting, and they found a spot for him. He had to get him in the lineup. He's the DH. And good for him. But the star of the game, if Devin Fontenot doesn't do what Devin Fontenot did last night, the Tigers are back home today.
Yeah.
That 4 1/3 innings of pitching that he did kept them off the board, gave his team an opportunity to get back into it and then take the lead. Devin Fontenot, the star of the game.
I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen tonight. LSU, Mississippi State, we've seen what happened in the regular season between these two. But, you know, whenever it goes to the Hoover Met, anything can happen. There's a lot of weird things that could happen between those two opponents.
Yeah. But they're so good at that venue.
They are.
We talked about the stat earlier. Paul Maneri just is ridiculous, the winning percentage that he's got, 36-8 at that complex. That's unheard of.
Well, 83 wins overall in the SEC tournament, more than anybody else in the conference. It's impressive to see what they've been able to do at Hoover, Alabama, or wherever the championship was held previously. Just phenomenal stuff right there from LSU.
Yeah. Bottom of the 12th, 4-4, no outs, but Georgia Southern with a runner at second base. So stay tuned for that one.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
We'll see. Armstrong pitching for the Cajuns. Survive in advance. If they don't, the season's over. So
it's double elimination, though, Jordy.
On that one. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, it was last night. Right. Last night was single elimination. That App State game that they managed to win. I believe 5-2 was the final on that one. So yeah, it'd be just a really fun matchup to see.
That's why I have you, man.
It's going to be fun to see what happens because they'll either be playing Little Rock or Troy, depending on what happens. I believe they win, they're going to play Troy. If they lose, they play Little Rock on tomorrow.
Well, you want to play Troy, obviously.
Yeah.
LSU needs to win. I think if they win that game, they secure a regional host bid.
Most definitely. I think they've already locked it down, honestly.
Then we'll go from there. I hope so. We'll see. I think it guarantees it if they can beat Mississippi State, which is a tall order. Thank you, CD.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce wherever you go, because I'm telling you, everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. I know some people. Crip is heading to Hoover for the game tonight. He's got some Cajun Chef with him from Bro Bridge. I promise you. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll talk New Orleans Saints next.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hulford Show on 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back to the Jordy Helfert Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. OTAs, organized team activities, forever that's worth. is taking place throughout the NFL and with the New Orleans Saints. We are thrilled to welcome in for the first time, and what I am sure will not be the last, a terrific writer for Canal Street Chronicles that deals solely with the New Orleans Saints. That is Bob Rose, who's kind enough to join us today. Robert, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Jordy. I appreciate you having me on. Excited about the opportunity and love the show.
How'd you get involved with covering the New Orleans Saints? What is that passion all about?
Well, I've liked them ever since I was little. My first trip to New Orleans with the family happened in 1984 when we were, we spent the summer down in the Gulf Coast region, specifically for the New Orleans World Fair, but we took a tour of the Superdome.
Yes.
I was a little kid at the time and got to see the Superdome and just kind of liked the New Orleans Saints from there on out.
And the rest is history. So this is the season that everyone's got their fingers crossed. They've had two just heart-wrenching, abrupt endings to consecutive seasons. It'll be interesting to see the mindset of this club and how Sean Payton goes about the task at hand with so much at stake and so much out there for them. I'll be curious to see what the mantra is this season.
Oh, there's little doubt. In fact, I mean, if you were to list your top concerns for the Saints going into the season, other than the almighty equalizer of potential injuries, number two on most people's list would be how the Saints come in, both coaching staff and players, how their mental and emotional makeup is going in. Because, I mean, these guys, obviously they're professionals and they take one game at a time and they have certain goals that they list throughout the season. And I think the way the season has ended the last 2 years has probably affected the fan base more than the players. But at the same time, these guys are human. This has to take a toll on them emotionally. So I'll be interested to see how they come out of the gate to open the 2019 regular season.
A lot of veterans, not many spaces or opportunities for a whole lot of players unless you're really, really good to get playing time. But there's that center position, right? And the Saints moved up again to get the center of their choice. I've got to believe that's one of the main focal points that everyone's going to be looking at in their second-round draft pick.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. A young man's name is Eric McCoy out of Texas A&M. And he is going to be expected to step into the sizable shoes of replacing Max Unger. And we all know how important it is for any quarterback, but particularly Drew Brees being of somewhat shorter stature, to have a solid interior pocket so he's able to survey the field. So McCoy's got some big shoes to fill. But that young man is a tremendous athlete. He's a student of the game, and he's what we call a phone booth mauler. I mean, he will just take his man and dominate him and a lot of times put him on his back. So we're really excited to have him in the black and gold.
You mentioned McCoy. There's another McCoy out there who's looking for a job, and that's Gerald McCoy. And Drew Brees and Gerald McCoy are buddies. They work out together. Brees has come out on USA Today, say, I want Gerald McCoy on my team. Is that feasible?
Yeah, absolutely it is. McCoy is still one of the better defensive tackles in the National Football League. As most Saints fans know, he has spent a career with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers torturing the New Orleans Saints. You mentioned a great wild card in this, and that he and Brees have a relationship together. And McCoy has stated his desire to play for a Super Bowl contender. There's none better than the New Orleans Saints. It's kind of a short hop, skip, and a jump over the Gulf from Tampa into New Orleans. So even if it's on a one-year deal, we know that Mickey Loomis and that Saints organization can juggle the finances to make it happen. So I think it's entirely feasible.
God, I hope it happens, don't you? I mean, that's you can't get enough good players, and that's a guy that eats up blockers and stuffs the run game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a terrific all-around defender. Even has the athleticism to even perhaps move outside in some certain passing alignments, although I don't think we'd see much of that if he did indeed come to the Saints. But one of the major concerns for this team is Sheldon Rankin's recovery from his Achilles injury. And now everything that you hear, he's right on target to come back around midseason. But even having said that, you know, you don't know how a player is going to come back from an injury like an Achilles, especially within that first season. And, you know, McCoy, with or without Rankins, McCoy would just give a jolt of talent to this already talented defensive line.
I'm all for it. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, kind enough to join us. I think there's a couple of other players that everybody wants to focus in on. That's Cook, the new tight end, and also a lot expected of Marcus Davenport. They made a big jump a year ago. He got injured, didn't get to play in as many snaps, but I got to believe he is they're counting on him to do an awful lot. I'm curious as how his injury is healing and how effective he's going to be in year number two.
Yeah, I think we're all waiting to see that. Like you said, they invested a lot of draft capital to move up and get Davenport, and they identified him as a difference maker on that front line and within that front seven. And even with limited snaps in his rookie year, he certainly showed the potential to be just that, a difference maker. Now that toe injury has set him back a little bit in OTAs, we're not too concerned about the long-term ramifications, but he is going to indeed be expected to take that next level and to step up and to be, if not an elite defender, certainly a very good one to kind of take the focus away from Cameron Jordan on the other edge.
Bob, the Saints just signed defensive end Wes Horton. What did they see in him and why as they waived linebacker Darrell Williams? What is the positives of Wes Horton?
Wes Horton was a really good rotational player for Carolina, and what was always a formidable Panthers front line, as most Saints fans know. And, you know, Horton, he has some pass rushing skills, although it's mostly through strength at the point of attack and kind of pushing that offensive tackle into the pass pocket. But he plays the run really well also. And if there is a weakness to be outlined on this Saints team or something to be a little concerned about, it is their depth at the defensive end position. Davenport and Jordan are no doubt your starters, and there's not many teams that have a better duo in the league at the edge. But depth was a little bit of concern. They signed Mario Edwards Jr., who kind of flip-flops between tackle and end depending on your alignment. They have expected Trey Hendrickson to take that next step forward. Bringing Wes Horton in will give them an additional rotational player. And I think Wes has some football left in him. He didn't have a great statistical year last year in Carolina, which was kind of why he was still on the free agency market. But it's a good investment, and it's a win-win situation. If it doesn't pan out for New Orleans, you know, okay, they still have some options at the position there. And if it does, a very good defensive line just got a lot deeper.
Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. We're thrilled to have him on. A lot of people concerned about the loss of Mark Ingram. He's gone, mainly because of what he brings to the locker room. Are you concerned about his lack of presence in that Saints locker room where it seems like everybody just really gets along well?
Yeah, they really do, and that's part of the things that make this team so easy to like. But as far as the loss of Ingram, as a person and as a player, you gotta love the guy, and how he's made himself into an every down back since his draft in 2000, being drafted in 2011. Yeah. He's going to be missed from that standpoint. But I'll tell you what, they signed Latavius Murray when the contract situation looked like it got out of control with Ingram. They signed Latavius Murray, who has a very similar statistics as to what Mark Ingram has had over his career. Latavius is about the same age, good in between the tackles runner, and probably is faster in the open field than what Ingram is. And Murray reportedly has been working pretty closely with Kamara, who everybody knows had a close relationship with Mark. But I expect Latavius Murray to do some good things. And as the Saints always do, they may have found an undrafted gem at running back in Divine Ozigbo from Nebraska. He was a 1,000-yard runner in his senior year, but his running style reminds people a lot of Mr. Ingram. So I expect Mr. Divine to turn some heads in OTAs and perhaps preseason, and that could be the next Sean Payton find.
Wow. One last one before we let you get out of here. Are you content with the Saints wide receiver core, or do you think they're still out looking for another one to really take some of the focus off of Michael Thomas?
They're going to be looking to see what kind of young receivers potentially get released. I mean, that's after all, that's how they came into, lucked into Lance Moore, and then a few years later. Why can't I remember his name? Willie Snead, I'm sorry.
Okay.
But the fact that the Saints did not draft a wide receiver tells you that Sean Payton feels fairly content with what he already has in that locker room. Cam Meredith is expected to take a big step out of basically a lost season last year, recovering from his knee injury. Keith Kirkwood and Tre'Quan Smith, both coming into their second years, they showed flashes of being, pretty productive receivers. They just weren't able to do it consistently. So I think those three men, in addition to Ted Ginn Jr. recovering from a knee injury, that limited him to only five games last year, this receiving core, it could surprise some people with their production outside of Michael Thomas. And like you mentioned, they certainly need that.
Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. I highly recommend you follow him and read it. Bob, that was terrific, man. And we'd love to have you on again and a lot more times when football season comes around. So we'd love to have you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's an honor. Thank you.
All right, buddy, you take care. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, here on the Jordy Hultberg Show. We'll take a timeout. We'll switch from the NFL to college football. Our friend, our guest, Hump Day with Huguenin, next.
This is NBC Sports Radio.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is. Guess what day it is.
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump Day!
Always our favorite guest. And we've been doing it for a long time, and he's the best in the business, I believe, at what he does, and that is Michael Huguenin. Happy early Memorial Day, my friend. How are you?
I am doing quite well, thanks.
What's going on at the Athletic? What is a writer, an esteemed writer such as yourself, what is this time of the year like for you?
I'm mostly editing, but it's the same. I think it's the same for everybody, no matter what sport you cover in a quote-unquote off-season. There really isn't an off season anymore. Pro football a decade ago, you can make the case it was legitimately already, heck, 15 years ago. There was something happening every day. And college football is becoming more and more like that. There's news cropping up everywhere. A really sort of bizarre story in Division III today. St. Thomas of Minnesota, which is a exceedingly good football-playing school in a league called the Minnesota Interscholastic Athletic Conference. It's been kicked out of its league for being too good.
I'm serious.
There was a vote, and they asked St. Thomas to leave, and St. Thomas is like, we're one of the founders. Get serious here. And they're like, we are serious. Either you leave on your own or we're kicking you out. So St. Thomas, my assumption is that they're not leaving on their own. They're getting kicked out. And evidently there's some bad blood because they were winning games, 56-0, 75-7.
Wow.
I think they won a game 82-0. But, there's no scholarships in Division III. So they have a really good coach. And they take football seriously at St. Thomas, just like they used to take football seriously at Division III St. John's when they had John Gagliardi, who's the winningest college football coach of all time. And, I don't know what you're teaching the players. Well, we know we can't beat them, so we're kicking them out because they're too good for us. But that's a weird story, obviously. But that's the kind of stuff that you look for on a daily basis. But you know, if you're an LSU fan, well, you know, besides the is he not transferring stuff about Joseph, you know, there's off-season conditioning going on. There's guys recruiting for 2020, 2021, and 2022. So it's always busy now. And I guess NFL teams now, I think I saw where there's actually some mini camps going on. So football, it never ends. But at the Athletic, we just added NASCAR coverage, open wheel coverage. So if you're an auto racing fan, that's one more thing you're going to be able to read about at the Athletic. But yeah, football, I think if you're a college football fan now, granted, most of the news at this time of year is bad news, but there's always a lot going on in college football and, frankly, in college basketball now as well.
Michael Hugan in The Athletic, kind enough to join us. I saw where Conference USA signed a television deal with the NFL Network. I mean, you got to find a crack in the mountain just to get on. I mean, the ESPN's got what they've got. Fox has what they have. CBS has the SEC. So good for Conference USA.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're not making a lot of money off this, but presumably, it's. You're on the NFL Network. You're the only league on the NFL Network. Maybe that adds some cachet. Maybe you can actually use that as a selling point on the recruiting trail. Though I don't think the most savvy recruiting, though, you're on NFL Network because no other network really wanted you. Let's be serious here. But, I mean, yeah, right. No, they're going to be on unencumbered on that network. So the NFL Network was looking for live programming. You can only show Super Bowl 46 highlights so many times. So, you know, why not show a live college game on the Saturday?
Yeah. Michael, you mentioned Kelvin Joseph, and this is a bizarre story because he enters the transfer portal, then his dad comes out and says, he ain't going anywhere, he's staying, and now Kelvin Joseph refutes the report that he's returning to LSU. What the heck do you make of this thing?
Yeah, this is interesting, to say the least. And if you go by what the kid says, he ain't coming back. And then maybe the father, I think he's a Baton Rouge kid, I think. Maybe the dad wants him to stay there. Who knows what's going on. But, from what I understand, he was not going to start, but he would have played a role. He's a pretty good player. So, plus, you and I talked about this. If you lose a guy that you expect to play a role at any time of the year, it's bad. But this is a really bad time because spring practice is over. He presumably got second team reps, maybe some starting reps. And instead of, if the coaches had known beforehand, this guy's leaving, so let's make sure this guy gets X number of second team reps, X number of first team reps. It's going to be whoever moves up a spot in the pecking order better be ready to hit the ground running when preseason camp starts. Because, I have no problem with kids transferring. This is a little bit bizarre because you have the dad saying, he ain't going anywhere. But it does open up playing time for somebody else. And that person those persons need to be ready once preseason camp starts the first week of August to seize that opportunity. And the scholarship is littered with guys who, I'm going to get a chance this fall. I'm going to be ready. Well, they're not really ready. In this instance, obviously, somebody's going to get a chance to play a heck of a lot more than they were expected to play this year. They better be ready when preseason camp starts.
Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. Apparently Edo is in California on vacation. Kelvin Joseph in intercession, which tells me maybe some academics are involved here, and he hasn't missed a day of class yet, so he's still doing everything along those lines. It'll be interesting to see how this turns out, but I'm sure there'll be a come-to-you-know-what meeting as soon as Ed gets back into town, and they'll sit down and discuss this, if not already over the phone. Were you surprised that Mississippi State extended Joe Moorhead with a contract through the 2022 season? Because I am.
I don't know why they felt the need to give him a four-year extension after he's been there for 1 year, and that 1 year, I would argue, was mildly disappointing. Joe Moore is an offense-minded guy, and they won last year because their defense was tremendous. Their offense actually took a step back in this first year. They're bringing in Tommy Stevens, the transfer grad transfer quarterback from Penn State. And then the reason Tommy Stevens left Penn State is he was not guaranteed to be the starter. So if you read between the lines, why would you transfer somewhere? Oh, he's going to be the starter. So that will be an interesting quarterback situation to watch. I think it's pretty obvious Moorhead, though, isn't exactly enamored with the guys currently on his roster who are ready to play this fall. I know there's a freshman, a redshirt freshman, but I don't think those guys are ready. Stevens knows Moorhead's offense, and maybe that's a positive. But, yeah, I think if – and the situations like with Moorhead, with any coach, I don't think they give a basketball coach an extension, a baseball coach, a softball coach, whatever. You've also now increased the financial impact for when you eventually get rid of that guy. Maybe Moorhead never leaves. That's fine. This won't mean anything. But I don't understand the rush to the bank, so to speak, by school ADs. Again, he just finished his first year. It was a mildly disappointing year. Why did you feel the need to extend his contract?
Michael Huguenin, The Athletic. I'm curious because I haven't heard really hardly a peep out of one of the more, I don't know if you want to call him controversial or verbose coaches out there in Lane Kiffin. And I guess he's entering his third year at FAU. How much longer do you think he stays there? And has he done enough in athletic directors' minds to warrant an opportunity at a Power 5 school very soon?
Yeah, it's funny. His first year at FAU was extremely successful. They go to a bowl game, win 9 games, and you hear his name bandied about. This guy's going to get a Power 5 job sooner rather than later. Then last year, they fell off the face of the earth. They were really bad. And you still heard people who weren't very informed saying, oh, he could get a Power 5 job this offseason. But this is an important year for Kiffin. His returning starter quarterback is a guy named Chris Robeson, who was suspended for all of spring. The team called it an internal matter. It comes out that he's being investigated for sexual battery. They announced Monday that they're accepting the transfer of DeAndre Francois from Florida State as a walk-on. DeAndre Francois was kicked out of Florida State for numerous off-field incidents, including domestic violence. He was investigated for domestic violence. This is an interesting off-season for Lane Kiffin. I don't think he's rehabbed his image nearly enough. He's got to win, and he's always tweeting, and some of the stuff he tweets out, you're like, dude, grow up. You're not 11 years old. So, given his quarterback situation there, there's a lot of added interest now at FAU. And the irony is, if you look a little bit further south, a coach who was hired the same offseason, Butch Davis, has done a better job at FIU in his 2 seasons than Kiffin has done his 2 seasons at FAU. Davis has recruited better. His team is not mired in seemingly perpetual controversy. And the thing about Chris Robeson originally signed with Oklahoma, enrolled in January, was kicked out 4 months later before he ever played a game at Oklahoma. And now he's bringing in DeAndre Francois. Chris Robeson suspended again. So there's some issues with FAU's quarterback. But again, at FIU, Butch Davis doesn't get any attention and is just sort of motoring along at 75 in the left-hand lane. Whereas Kiffin's one of those guys who's going 90 and blows past you, and then you notice him on the side of the road, the cops have pulled him over for speeding. And, oh, there he is getting off for gas. Oh, there he is, he needs a soda. And, meanwhile, Butch Davis is about 50 miles further down the road.
Yeah, the tortoise in the hare, right? Michael Huguenin, The Athletic. I saw this. 5 schools have appeared in the final AP Top 25 in football and men's basketball. 2 schools from the SEC that you may not really think it would be, but Kentucky in the top 25 in football and men's basketball, and LSU in football and men's basketball. So no Alabama, no Auburn, none of those schools, but Michigan, Cincinnati, and Utah State are the other three schools up making the top five that appeared in both football and basketball in the top 25. So that's a feather in the cap, right?
Yeah, it is. And I think that Kentucky, I don't think we're going to see Kentucky in the football top 25. I think we're certainly going to see LSU in the football top 25. The basketball program going forward, obviously, is going to be the interesting question. Cincinnati, Luke Fickell's a good football coach. They lost Nick Cronin. And Utah State, that's obviously surprising to people, but you know, Matt Wells, the football coach, left to go to Texas Tech, and I think he'll do a pretty good job there. But that's the fact that there's only two Power 5 schools in the mix, and they're both from the SEC. That's got to make Greg Sankey happy. It's got to make LSU fans happy, and it's got to make Kentucky fans ecstatic. Part of that, LSU and Kentucky fans, okay, we expect to be in the top 25 in football and basketball, respectively. The other sports was a surprise, but I think, again, Kentucky football, I think that is one of the more interesting programs, not only in the SEC, but nationally, because I think they're going to fall off. They lost Benny Snell, who was, frankly, their whole offense, and they lost Josh Allen, who I think you can make a case was the second-best defensive player in U.K. history behind only Art Still. So how good is Kentucky going to be this fall in football? And you and I have talked about this many times. Last year was the first time since 1977 that Kentucky had a winning record in conference play in football.
Yeah, so amazing. That's
a lot of mediocrity to overcome.
Art Still.
But I think they're going to slide back into mediocrity this fall.
Michigan, any word on the basketball situation there?
Yeah, looks like it's going to be Juwan Howard, which is extremely interesting. You know, John Beilein is an extremely high-level coach. Now, you talk to people in the NBA, and I work at places that has covered NBA teams. A friend of mine covers the NBA. Juwan Howard actually has a really good reputation as a guy who was a big thinking player. He thought about the big picture. He understood what, you know, some players only worried about, you know, what am I supposed to do on this play? Howard supposedly was one of those guys who is a snapshot kind of player. Okay, that play bogged down because the point guard didn't do what he was supposed to do. So from that aspect, or the center failed to do the pick at the right time. He was a second late, and that lost the timing. So Howard has a great reputation as a big thinker. You wonder how he would be on the recruiting trail. Presumably he could say, hey, I won some NBA titles, and hey, ask me about playing with LeBron, I can tell you. And ask me about playing in the NBA for 15 years. I can tell you that. I can tell you what you need to do to get there. The makeup of his staff would be vital. That would be an interesting – but, I mean, again, John Beilein was one of the top five tacticians in college basketball. So you're losing something with him being gone. I think Memphis is a perfect example. Penny Hardaway can recruit with anybody. The interesting thing about Memphis yesterday – they announced that they were relieving one of their assistants of their duties. That was Sam Mitchell, who was a longtime NBA player, a former NBA coach, and evidently those two didn't mesh. So that's a lot of basketball knowledge being sent packing. And with Beilein leaving and presumably Juwan Howard or, frankly, almost anybody coming in, the tactician X's and O's aspect is going to take a gigantic fall for Michigan.
He's Michael Hugin of The Athletic. It's always great talking with you, buddy. You and your family have a wonderful Memorial Day holiday, and we look forward to talking to you next time, buddy. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thanks. Appreciate it. See you.
All right. You take care. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Your source for LSU sports. Tonight, LSU, Mississippi State. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Sad news for the Raging Cajuns. They fall to Georgia Southern 6-5. The Cajuns actually took a 5-4 lead in the top of the 13th inning, and then the wheels kind of fell off. A leadoff double, pitching change comes. You know, Jacob Schultz replaces Caleb Armstrong, and a throwing error to third base. And two runs score, and the Raging Cajuns come up on the short end of the stick. So now they will play tomorrow in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. They'll take on Troy, 8 o'clock our time, 9 o'clock Eastern, in a Thursday elimination game. So a game that they fought hard. They came back multiple times, took a lead. Georgia Southern came back and tied it. And then Georgia Southern comes up. The final line score, Georgia Southern 6 runs on 10 hits, 3 errors, 5 left on base. The Raging Cajuns 5 runs on 11 hits, 2 errors, and a whopping 10 runners left on base. So there you go with that one. LSU and Mississippi State tonight, tentatively set for 8 o'clock. But just keep it locked in here on 103.7 The Game, and we'll have the pregame show 30 minutes before the first pitch. Double elimination time. Eric Walker on the mound for the Tigers against a team that they have controlled. They've won an awful lot against them, but State brings an awful lot to the table. So it should be a fun game, and a lot of LSU fans are there or are heading there as we speak. So there you have it. If it's your birthday today, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. I hope you have a great day. You share it with the likes of 31-year-old Novak Djokovic of tennis fame, and he just signed a new contract with the New England Patriots. He'll be catching passes from Tom Brady. Happy 32nd birthday to Julian Edelman. Special thanks to our guest today, David DeLucci from the Hoover Met, Sam Amico talking NBA hoops, Bob Rose talking about the Saints, Michael Huguenin talking all things college football and basketball. CD, outstanding job as always. We'll see if the Cajuns can bounce back. We'll see if the Tigers can stay on the winner's side of the SEC tournament bracket. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Closing time. So enjoy the rest of your afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game, and around the world on 1037thegame.com. I'm Jordy Hultberg. Hope you have a great one. And remember, stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.